This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome on into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Big show coming your way on this Wednesday. Nick Whalen here with Eric Halterman. We got two great guests lined up for you. We're going to do our U.S. Open preview with our good pal Len Hochberg. He'll be joining us in about 10-15 minutes. All of his thoughts, all of his best bets for a huge, huge weekend in golf. We got game three of the NBA Finals coming our way tonight. Pacers, Thunder, a series now shifting to Indianapolis. Alex Berutha, he's going to stop by later in the show with all of his favorite plays for the night. We'll have Eric's best bets for a big slate in baseball as well. Eric, a lot to get to off the top here, too, but we have some news in the sports betting tax regions, something that we've been tracking very closely here at VSiN. And, you know, we got the news a couple of weeks ago that in the state of Illinois, we'll have a new tax applied to each wager that a sportsbook accepts, 25 cents per bet for the first 20 million wagers made, 50 cents per wager after that. And, you know, in the wake of this, we've had sportsbooks responding, we've had gaming commissions responding. FanDuel announced earlier this week that it will try to offset this tax in the state of Illinois with a 50-cent fee on each bet placed, and that will begin September 1st. The new tax, of course, kicks in on July 1st, so just a few weeks from now. Eric, this is hitting home for you, man. You are an Illinois resident. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, so as an Illinois resident, I don't object in principle to the idea of, you know, paying taxes for goods and services. You know, we've got a budget issue right now with the transit system in Chicago. All right, fine. We got to raise taxes somewhere. Nobody's going to listen to people in our position saying there should be no taxes on the things we like doing. Obviously not. But I do have some, I think, legitimate issues with the way this is being done. If you're going to do it, why do it in a way that punishes poorer bettors more than wealthier ones, right? When we talk about bets, we often talk in terms of units, and that's because we know for some people, they'll throw out $100, $1,000 on a bet, no problem. For other people, it's, you know, $1, $5, and this is going to hit those smaller bettors more. And why would you do that? And it just doesn't make logical sense to me either to do this on anything but a percentage basis. For example, if you say, I'm going to bet $100 this week, if you do it on one bet, now you're only hit with a 50-cent tax. If you spread that across, you know, 20 bets, you're hit with several dollars worth of fees. And that just doesn't make sense to me. The other thing here, It looks like the law is putting a 25-cent fee on the first 20 million bets at these sports books and then a 50-cent fee at every bet after that. Well, it sounds like FanDuel is putting a 50-cent fee on all our bets. Wait a second. Have they found a way to sneak in a little bit of extra profit here and get us mad at the government instead of them? I don't like that at all. So I hope they tweak this in a way that it is more fair to all sorts of sports bettors. Because frankly, people who want to bet just a buck or two, I consider them as much part of the sports betting community as people who want to bet $1,000. We should have a system that works for everybody.
Couldn't agree more, man. Couldn't agree more. And I would imagine we will see other operators, other books follow suit now that FanDuel, you know, is leading the way here, for lack of a better term, in terms of that fee. But you're totally right. I mean, this is something that is going to impact the casual bettor, impact the low dollar bettor. And one of my concerns here, Eric, is that, you know, one, it could push people away from the traditional regulated sports books into, you know, murkier waters. But we'll leave it at that. But it could also drive low dollar bettors, people who are throwing a dollar on a future, $5, $10. It could drive them to bet more, to bet higher amounts that maybe they're not comfortable normally betting, right? You're essentially tricking yourself into thinking, well, if I'm going to be taxed 50 cents anyway, you know, if why bet 10 or why bet $5 when I'm losing 10%, 5% of my investment right off the bat? You know, this is what I have to do in order to avoid getting crushed by the tax.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's either going to push those low dollar bettors out of the sports betting community entirely, which is too bad. Because again, people who bet just because they like the thrill of winning, they don't care if they're winning $2 or 50. Those are fun people. Yeah. I like talking sports betting with them. I don't want them gone. And I also don't want them betting amounts they're uncomfortable with. So I don't like this at all. I hope there's a new way to get at the same general idea that's fair to everybody.
Well, we'll certainly continue to track this here on Prop Points. I know the whole VSiN network has a very close eye on the regulations being enacted in the state of Illinois. So we'll see how that develops over the course of the summer. Before we talk some NBA Finals, Eric, we do have a heavy early slate in Major League Baseball today. Three games currently in action. We got a handful more starting up in the next hour or two. We're looking ahead to first pitch between the Braves and the Brewers. That'll be coming up in about 5 minutes or about 10 minutes from first pitch out in St. Louis between the Cardinals and the Blue Jays. We're at the top of the sixth already in Marlins Pirates. Pirates holding on to a 4-0 lead there. Your Philadelphia Phillies, Eric, leading the Cubs 4-0. Just saw Kyle Schwarber hit a home run in the bottom of the third to push that lead up to 4, a solo shot for Schwarber. Phillies got two runners on right now with two outs in the bottom of the third. Guardians jumping all over the Cincinnati Reds. We're in the top of the fourth there, now 5-0 in favor of Cleveland. We just had a grand slam, by the way, by Carlos Santana. Jose Ramirez with an RBI double in the first inning to lead off the scoring. We'll keep you posted on all those games in progress as the show goes along. Eric's going to have his best bets for the night slate coming later in the show. I want to ask you something about the Milwaukee Brewers, Eric, because this is a team that, you know, we're keeping a close eye on. Of course, I'm always keeping an eye on the Milwaukee Brewers, but they've charged their way into the wild card mix in the National League over these last couple of weeks. Christian Yelich, one, not in the lineup today. This will be two straight days off for Yelich, starting to deal with some after effects of taking a pitch off the hand last weekend. But we had some big news on the pitching side as well. Not only are the Brewers moving Aaron Civale, yesterday's starter, to the bullpen, they're calling up one of their top pitching prospects, somebody that I can tell you in the Brewers world we've been clamoring for a while, Jacob Mizorowski, set to come up and make a start tomorrow against the Cardinals.
Yeah, very exciting news for Brewers fans. Very exciting news for fantasy players who want to see a high strikeout pitcher enter the pitching pool. I would expect some big bids on him this weekend. Mizorowski is somebody who has whiffed a ton of batters throughout his minor league journey and also has had quite poor control. The control's getting a little better this year. I mean, we're talking about a 12% walk rate still, but at least it's not 14. So this looks like somebody who is going to be given a legitimate chance to start. Maybe not go super deep into games if he can't keep that control well, but the Brewers haven't seemed to mind that. They're always getting creative with their pitching. I think there's some real potential if Mizorowski hits the ground running. The Brewers also have Logan Henderson, who's back down in the minors. I think some were surprised that it's Mizorowski who gets the call here and not Henderson returning, given how Henderson has pitched. So there's some pieces that are going to help this Brewers team down the stretch. They'll use the boring veterans to get them to this point. I think there's some potentially a bright future here. Going to be really excited to see how Mizorowski's first couple starts go.
Yeah, you mentioned Logan Henderson. I think we'll see plenty of him over the second half of the season. We'll see how Brandon Woodruff as well, who had that setback in his rehab, took a line drive off the arm last week, but still somebody that they expect to get back in the coming weeks. Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use, rankings, projections, updates, data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering the code ROTO15. That's ROTO15. Put in that code ROTO15 at checkout. You'll get 15% off any RotoWire product. Go check it out over at rotowire.com. One other baseball note I want to hit with you, Eric. We had a Shohei Ohtani pitching update through a 44-pitch sim game yesterday out in San Diego. You know, we've known that he's been building up behind the scenes for a while, but really what stuck out to me here is Dave Roberts saying after that sim game, there is, quote, a north of zero chance we could see Shohei Ohtani back on the mound in a major league game before the All-Star break.
Yeah, very exciting. Definitely a surprise until you think about it for a bit more and you realize, okay, this is the stage where a normal pitcher would be entering a rehab assignment, right? Shortly before the All-Star break, given where he is now. Well, you're not going to take Shohei Ohtani's bat out of the lineup for multiple weeks so that he can go rehab pitching in some minor league games. So instead of that, I guess we're probably going to see a rehab assignment at the big league level where he goes maybe one inning, then two, then three, then four. It's going to be still a long time before he's fully unleashed as a starter, going deep enough into games that he can get wins. And, you know, we should expect his first few appearances to be worse than the typical Shohei Ohtani, because that's what happens generally in your first few rehab outings. It's a unique situation, but I think it makes sense. I think we will probably see him. The question is going to be, what's that going to do to his MVP chances? He's still the clear favorite, about minus 300 right now. Is that because he's going to pitch in the second half and just completely run away with the MVP race? Or is the fact that he's going to pitch going to, you know, mess with his rhythm as a hitter and take him out of the lineup more often as he works his way back into that two-way role? It's going to be interesting to see exactly how they manage that going forward.
Got a couple home run updates for you on the in-progress baseball games. Now 4-1 between the Pirates and the Marlins. Heriberto Hernandez with a solo shot in the top of the sixth for Miami. Again, 4-1 there in favor of the Pirates. And just told you the Guardians were up 5-0. Now 5-1, Ellie De La Cruz with a long home run in the top of the fourth. So Guardians still in control there as we now head to the bottom of the fourth. We're going to talk with Alex Baruta later in the show. He's going to give us all of his best bets for game three of the NBA Finals tonight. But a couple plays I want to get off my chest here, Eric, in the first segment. Talked a lot about Aaron Nesmith this week. I'm locking in the over 2.5 made threes for Nesmith. Played that at plus 140. Now down to plus 120 at some books. So shop around, see what kind of number you can find there. 15 three-point attempts for Nesmith over these first two games of the NBA Finals. 12 of those have been either open or wide open, according to NBA.com/stats. I think the Pacers know they have to win the math battle from beyond the arc. You can't play even with the Thunder from three like they did in game two. I think they'll be getting attempts up behind Aaron Nesmith tonight. And a defensive prop that I like. SGA over 1.5 steals, minus 140. And he's got 7 steals so far in this series. Has gone over that number 12 of 18 games so far in the postseason. We got the U.S. Open starting up tomorrow in the PGA world. Len Hochberg, our golf expert at RotoWire, is going to join us next with all of his best plays. It's coming up on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman hanging out with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Got one of our favorite guests joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, helping us break down a monster weekend on the PGA Tour. The U.S. Open starting up tomorrow from Oakmont, Pennsylvania. Len, welcome back to the show, man. Let's get right into it. I know you've provided a ton of coverage for us over at RotoWire. You got your U.S. Open power rankings. You have your usual DFS breakdown. Taking a look at all the prices over on DraftKings. You're doing some video work. You've been all over the place this week. If we look at the odds board right now, no surprise at the top. Scottie Scheffler is the favorite to win, as usual, plus 275. That's essentially what we've come to expect, whether it's a major or a non-major. If Scottie Scheffler's in the field, Len, he will be the favorite. Now, if you're putting Scottie in a DFS lineup, how do you have to approach the rest of that build? Is it actually easier than you might expect this week to build around Scottie Scheffler?
Yeah, it is, Nick, and good to be with you guys. Yeah, it was very surprising. First thing you see in DFS lineup, DraftKings price, $14,400. I don't think we've ever seen a higher price than that. You go, okay, how am I going to get five other guys in the lineup? Averages out to $7,120 for the remaining five. But the prices are really, really fascinating. There are only 29 guys, 7,000 and up. There are almost 130 guys in the fives and 6,000s. So it's easily doable from just a math perspective, and you can even get some other good guys in. You know, you can get a guy around 8,000, maybe in the low eights in there, because you can dip into the 5,000s. There aren't that many guys in the 5,000s I like, but it's certainly doable. And if you want to put Scottie Scheffler in your lineup, I would say go ahead.
Len, I want to ask you about a couple of the LIV guys, Bryson DeChambeau and John Rahm. DeChambeau's second favorite to win this for a second straight year. He's at plus 750. Last year, he won at 20-1, also won this back in 2020. Rahm looks like a major contender again after a good performance at the PGA last month. What are your expectations for both of these guys?
Yeah, and it's interesting, Eric. Bryson DeChambeau has overtaken Rory McIlroy and is now the number two choice in the betting market. I don't think we've ever seen that this close to a major tournament in the days, you know, an injury aside or anything like that. But Bryson DeChambeau has really become a complete player. When he won the U.S. Open in 2020 at Wingfoot. He just hit it as far as he could. It didn't matter where it went. And he was able to, the bomb and gouge plan, and it worked for him. But he has now become a better all-around golfer. I think he realizes that you can't win all the time just doing what you want. You have to take only what the golf course gives you, which is why he's been so successful the last couple of years at the Masters, which is why he won the Open last year. He almost won the PGA last year. And so I do like his chances a lot. He talked at his news conference how he will not bomb and gouge this week, that he will take his foot off the gas as needed. And I think that really bodes well for him and for his supporters. John Rahm had done nothing since leaving for LIV, outside of LIV. He did nothing in the majors the last couple of years until just recently at the PGA. And he really was starting to give Scottie Scheffler a run for his money. He did sort of implode on the back nine on Sunday, but I think he showed enough to let everybody know that he still has the chops to compete for a major title. I like both of them this week.
So, Len, we mentioned that Bryson DeChambeau, obviously at plus 750, a shorter shot than Rory McIlroy. That is not what we're used to seeing this year, right? If Rory's in a tournament, he's usually installed at number two, right behind Scottie Scheffler. Does that say more about Bryson, or does that say more about Rory's recent form?
I think probably more about Rory's recent form. I think we're all a little surprised that after the Masters, when we just thought it would sort of free him up to just play golf without any care in the world, well, he doesn't have any care in the world, and apparently not even about golf right now. He's like on an extended spring break. I think that'll eventually come to pass, maybe as soon as well, I don't know if it'll happen this week, but next month at Royal Portrush, I think he's going to want to try and win an Open back on home soil. But yeah, he just has not been on form. He looked terrible at the Canadian Open and missing the cut. Bryson DeChambeau was pretty even, kind of close with him in the odds before we saw the real sharp turn there. So I think this is really more about McIlroy. DeChambeau's been there all along.
Why don't you break down this course for us, Len? Overall, Oakmont, it's a difficult course. Seems like there's an effort to tune it up as much as possible this year. The over-under for the winning score is set at -1.5. That seems pretty tough to me. Which side of that do you take?
Well, it's going to be pretty close. These guys are really good at doing that. You know, they asked the golfers, a lot of the golfers on the site this week, would you take even par right now? And everyone said, yeah, I would sign up for even par. This course has no weakness. I don't know, think 85 Chicago Bears or something like that. It's long, so you want to hit it far, but you got to get it in the fairway, and the fairways are narrow because if you miss the fairways, you're in 5-inch thick rough. There are almost 170 bunkers, which is almost 10 per hole. The greens are about as fast as they've ever been for a PGA Tour event, closing in on 15 on the stimp meter. So there is no respite anywhere on this golf course. You just have to really just take your time and be very, very sure of yourself and not try and take any chances. When Dustin Johnson won in 2016 at this golf course, he had only 6 holes over par, 5 bogeys and 1 double. And that is the blueprint for winning this week.
Folks, you want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and you'll get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum. It's a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and you'll get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from VSiN hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2026 NFL betting guide, which drops on July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe and use the promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Len Hochberg, our golf expert over at rotowire.com, joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Len, this is the most difficult tournament on the entire PGA schedule to make the cut. 60 golfers and ties will make it through to the weekend. Does that impact at all how you're betting this tournament, how you're building your DFS lineup?
Yeah, I think it does, in conjunction with Oakmont. Not looking for any Cowboys this week, looking for guys who really are good at avoiding bogeys, who are just good at putting the ball in the fairway. They're not really taking chances. You're not going to have to get to 22 under, 25 under, where you really have to go for it on a lot of shots. It's quite the opposite this week. So there are certain players who are better suited for birdie fest and to get it to 25 under. And there are a lot of guys on the tour who can't. But conversely, there are guys better suited for going par, 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 par. And you really need a certain mindset to be able to do that, because you always want to get a birdie. I mean, if you're a professional golfer, you want to get as low as possible. You really have to have the mindset that I am not going to get a lot of them this week. So, yeah, I do look for guys who are a little bit more cautious and may not be able to get to 25 under some weeks, but I don't care about that this week.
So speaking of some of those guys, if we're talking either betting or DFS, who are some names you'd be looking at outside of that top group of favorites who you think are well-suited for this course?
Well, guys who I really like, guys who can hit the ball straight and will sacrifice distance. I mean, there's a lot of talk this week. What's more important in Oakmont, distance or getting the ball in the fairway? I think if you get the ball in the rough, it's almost like a one-stroke penalty. You might just have to sort of chip out sideways, and then you're in your third shot from far back. So I think it's much more advantageous to be in the fairway. And there are some very good golfers who are in the top 15 in the world who are very accurate. Colin Morikawa, very high in the top 15. A little bit lower down, Shane Lowry, Sepp Straka, Russell Henley. These guys are all top 15 in the world. They're all priced a little bit lower. They're not in the 10s or the 9s, and they're in the 7s, actually. Now, I'm misremembering here. They're all in the 7,000s, Henley, Straka, Lowry. You can get all three of those guys in your lineup, and that's the sort of thing I'm looking for this week.
All right, Len, we'll end on this. Phil Mickelson acknowledged this week this could very well be his final U.S. Open. Would you consider a sprinkle on Phil to make the cut at +145?
Yeah, I would love to. I think the mindset about Phil Mickelson has changed from when he went for LIV originally. There was a lot of anger and animosity and stuff. I think he's more of a grand old man now. I don't think he can make the cut at all. And I do think it will be his last, but don't ever think that the USGA might not give him a special invite next year for number 35.
Len Hochberg, everybody, go check out all of his fantastic work for us over at rotowire.com. He's got power rankings, he got DFS breakdowns, everything you need ahead of the US Open. Game 3 of the NBA Finals coming our way later tonight. Alex Perutha going to stop by the show with his best bets coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Prop Points rolling along here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman here with you today, giving you some updates first and foremost on the Major League Baseball slate. We got, five games in action right now. Braves Brewers is underway. We're in the top of the second there. Braves just put two runs on the board, a Michael Harris home run, which also scored Marcell Ozuna. So 2-0 Atlanta, one out in the top of the second. Marlins have added another run. They still trail the Pirates 4-2. We're in the top of the seventh in Pittsburgh. Phillies up now 6-1 on the Chicago Cubs. Alec Bohm with 3 RBI on the day, top of the fifth there. Guardians up 7-1 on the Cincinnati Reds. Kyle Manzardo responsible for the last two runs batted in on a double. Just underway between the Blue Jays and the Cardinals. Bottom of the first there, 0-0. Game 3 of the NBA Finals coming our way tonight. Our good friend Alex Perutha stops by the show on the Progressive Guest Line to help us break it all down. Alex, very interesting spread that has not really moved as much as I maybe thought it would. When we saw that opening number, there were some 4.5s out there on Sunday night. There were some 5s. Number now sits at 5.5 at the DK Sportsbook. Total down a bit to 227.5. Was up as high as 228.5 earlier in the week. I will tell you right now, 69% of the money coming in on OKC to cover that 5.5 per our betting splits over at VSiN.com. But this OKC team, Alex, they've been dominant all around. They've been significantly better at home in these playoffs than they've been on the road.
They have. And usually, you know, that's a mark of a young team. You know, sometimes can struggle on the road. I still think on the number, I would rather have OKC. Even if you want to assume something like 2 or 3 points for home court advantage for Indiana and, you know, needing this game pretty badly to you know, not go down 2-1 in the series, the number is just too close for me. This OKC team looked great in game two, but I think they can actually look better. And I think to some extent, maybe the books are not expecting, you know, the knockout game, you know, 135 to 100 or something like that on Indiana's home floor. But at some point, I just want to take the value where it is. And I actually thought in game two, the value was on Indiana when they were 11.5 point underdogs. But now I got to take OKC plus 5.5 or minus 5.5. Sorry.
Alex, I've got a open-ended one for you, but as the show's called Prop Points, we got to ask, what are your favorite props for tonight's game?
Yeah, I'll start off with a Tyrese Halliburton prop. Under 8.5 assists, I found it at minus 135. He's averaging 6 assists in the series on 14 potential assists, so usually that comes out to like 6 or 7, you know, in the grand scheme of things, but you know, earlier in the playoffs, he was a much more active passer. His assists have kind of fallen off as the playoffs have gone along. He's averaging just a hair over 8 assists his past 12 playoff games. The thing is, first of all, OKC is doing a great job of just taking him out of the game. This is not completely relevant to the assist stat, but Halliburton has taken no free throws in the series at all. They're being physical with him, and he just can't really take advantage of it. And I'm not really sure how much I trust Indiana to continue to shoot 41% from three, which is where they're at right now. And a lot of those are going to be generated by Halliburton in theory. And they're shooting 46% for the field overall. So, again, I think the books are expecting Indiana to have a good offensive game. I mean, with the total around 225, 226 on their home floor. But 8.5 is just a little too high for me, given what we've seen from him so far.
Now, Alex, I know you're also looking at Jalen Williams tonight. You're looking at Isaiah Hartenstein on the Thunder side of things.
Yeah, the Jalen Williams one, this is just sort of it's almost like an autoplay for me. A Jalen Williams over steals prop, over 1.5 steals at plus 138. He's got at least one steal in 10 of his past 11 games for an average of 1.8. So you got a high floor on this one, and you're getting plus money. And in these finals, he has 12 total deflections. Now, it's only resulting in 2 steals. I'm sort of hoping for some positive regression to the mean there. But the Isaiah Hartenstein prop, over 8.5 rebounds plus assists. This is at minus 138. In game one, OKC tried to go a little bit smaller. They got destroyed on the glass. I mean, that was one of the main reasons they lost the game. In game two, we saw some more Hartenstein. He played 22 minutes. They went with some double big lineups, and ultimately he had a good game, and they won the rebounding battle. They had more offensive rebounds than Indiana in game two. And in the series now, Hartenstein is averaging 8.5 rebounds and 2 assists. He's averaging 6 potential assists per game in the series. He's been active as a passer. And I think OKC will continue to lean on that game plan of maybe not we're going to play Hartenstein 30 minutes, but it worked out so well for them in game two to play him in the low 20s. Maybe you can push him up to 25. We'll see what Rick Carlisle does as a counter. We saw a little Obi Toppin at the 5 for Indiana in game two. That smelled a lot like desperation. I don't like that. I don't think that's something that you can do. I think you are sort of trapped into playing Miles Turner or Thomas Bryant if you're Indiana. So I think we'll continue to see more or less the same rotation from both of these teams, especially OKC in game three.
Now, Alex, I can't get the 0-1 NBA Finals out of my head when I think of this series, with my Sixers upsetting the Lakers in that one, AI stepping over Ty Lue, and then nothing good happening for the Sixers ever again. If this series follows a similar pattern, we've got the under 5.5 games for this series at plus 175. Do you think OKC will do what the Lakers did back in 01 and lose the first to a big underdog and then just cruise the rest of the way?
Yeah, I mean, my prediction for the series was OKC in 5. So I'll stick to that and say, yeah, sure, at plus 170 something, whatever you said, it was that they seems like good value. you know, I mean, Indiana's not going to be favored in any game in this series. And ultimately, like, OKC is doing a great job of cutting the head off the snake, which is just limiting Tyrese Halliburton. And then, you know, Indiana has some guys like Siakam can have his games, and Nembhard can do some off the ball stuff. And maybe Miles Turner stops turning the ball over four or five times a game. But like, this OKC team, they were the overwhelming favorites all season for a reason. They're one of the best regular season teams ever. They have like five all NBA, all defense caliber players on their roster, basically creating a lab to shut down any team's guard creator. So, you know, I think Indiana can put up a fight. They won game one. That doesn't surprise me because I thought they'd win a game, but the rest of the series, yeah, I would not be surprised if OKC swept the rest of the series.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I also had Thunder in five. I did not think they would lose game one. But look, we had to get that loss out of the way somewhere. And as we know here, when a final series is 1-1, the winner of game three ends up winning that series 80% of the time, 33-8 all time. So whatever we see happen tonight will go a long way toward dictating the rest of that series. We'll have more from Alex Berutha in a moment. But first, VSiN is hitting the road for the College World Series in Omaha. We'll be live tomorrow through Saturday, broadcasting straight from Rocco's, the iconic home of the Jello Shot Challenge. You can catch Money Moves and Follow the Money live from Omaha with the sights, sounds, and best bets from the tournament. Head over to VSiN.com/CWS for all the details and a free College World Series betting guide. Alex Berutha, our NBA expert from RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Alex, we've talked a lot about Tyrese Halliburton, not only ahead of game three, but even through the first two games of this series. I know you like the under on the 8.5 assists tonight, but what do you expect from Tyrese Halliburton in terms of the overall level of aggression? You know, I think that has become one of the tropes of this series already, which is Tyrese Halliburton needs to do more. Is he the type of player who's actually capable of that? Do you want Tyrese Halliburton to try to go into takeover mode?
I think it has to be on the table at some point. I think there has to be at least one of these games where he has to do everything he can to just play through contact, draw a free throw. Like, I think you have to at some point go inside and try to, you know, make a contact layup. Like, I know that sounds ridiculous and sounds very simple, but it's very difficult. And the Pacers players said it in game two, or after game two, like, we could not get in the paint. We could not get in the paint. We could not generate good looks by forcing the defense to collapse and kicking out, which is one of OKC's, it's their strength and it's their weakness. When somebody gets in the paint, everyone swarms, and then a shooter is going to be open, usually in the corner. They give up a lot of corner threes. And if Halliburton cannot get into that zone, the Pacers are not going to be able to generate offense. And at some point, if the Thunder don't think he's going to generate any offense for himself, you know, if they think he's going to get in the paint and always pass or always shoot a floater and never try to take it to Chet Holmgren or Isaiah Hartenstein, they're not going to respect him. And then there are no passes to make. And then all of a sudden you're kind of frozen. Yeah. So I think at some point he just has to go out there and try to take 15, 20 shots.
Yeah, well, one of the things OKC so good at is preventing you from even getting that pass off, right? It's all well and good to get into the lane to draw the defense, but you got Caruso, you got Cason Wallace, you got Lu Dort closing out on you, trying to rip that ball away. We will see how it all plays out tonight in game three. Alex Berutha, everybody, go check out his great work over at rotowire.com. Follow him on Twitter at Berutha Alex. We got MLB score updates. We got Major League Baseball best bets coming your way here on Prop Point.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman back with you. It's Prop Points here on the VSiN Network, taking you up to the top of the hour. As always, Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next. That starts up at 3 p.m. Eastern. Follow the Money with Matt Brown and Mike Somich. That's coming up at 4 p.m. And again, Follow the Money along with Money Moves will be live from Omaha tomorrow through Saturday. So make sure you check that out. Full coverage of the College World Series. Later tonight, Scott Seidenberg on the mic, VSiN Primetime, coming your way at 7 p.m. Eastern. Full schedule, as always, here on the Sports Betting Network. Eric, we got a nice mix of day games and night games on a full MLB slate tonight. Braves have now opened up a 3-1 lead on the Milwaukee Brewers. A lot of scoring early on. We just finished the second inning, so Atlanta about to be up to bat again. Matt Olson, Marcell Ozuna, Ozzy Albies coming up next for the Braves. Saw Michael Harris hit a 2-run shot in the top of the second. Drake Baldwin followed up with an RBI single. Rhys Hoskins answering with a solo shot in the bottom of the second. So 3-1 Braves as we head to the third. Still 4-2 in Pirates Marlins. Pittsburgh leading that one in the top of the eighth. Guardians up 7-2 on the Cincinnati Reds. And the Cardinals have a run on the board. We're in the bottom of the second. St. Louis leading the Toronto Blue Jays. Eric, your team finishing up a series against the Chicago Cubs. Phillies lead this one 6-1. We're about to head to the bottom of the sixth. Really interesting pitching matchup, you know, that we didn't really get a chance to preview with this game starting early. Ben Brown going up against Jesus Luzardo.
Yeah, and it was interesting in both directions. Ben Brown has had a very up and down season with, you know, ERA estimators that look a lot better than the ERA. And then there was a recent storyline that he's added a third pitch, the kick change, which is all the rage this year. He really probably needed a third pitch to have long-term success. He'd had a couple of good starts in a row, and then he threw a dud today against the Phillies. Then on the opposite side, Jesus Luzardo was cruising, had a 2.15 ERA through 11 starts, then gave up 20 runs across his last two. Was that going to continue? Apparently not. He's had an excellent outing today, one run in six innings, 10 strikeouts, and no walks so far. So two guys who had narratives building about them, both of which now seem wrong. So I guess I'm glad we didn't get the chance to talk about those narratives before the game happened.
Well, good note on the kick change edition for Ben Brown. Did you ever pitch back in your day, Eric? In the little league days, were you a pitcher?
Extremely poorly, double digit ERAs. For some reason, whenever I pitched in practice, I kept hitting this one dude who went on to become a Marine. I couldn't hit anybody else, but whenever this one guy came up to the plate, I hit him every time. So it was probably good that I didn't pitch more than that.
Yeah, I think I threw in one game and got completely shelled and cried, and that was the end of that. You know, I had one pitch. I did not have much of a mix. It was a fastball, like 41 miles an hour, right down the middle every single time. So you can imagine how that went. The ERA estimators did not love Nick Whalen's data back in like 2004. Anyway, let's get on to the late slate tonight, Eric. I know you have a bunch of plays in your back pocket for us. Mariners on the road at the Diamondbacks. This one actually starting up mid-afternoon, 3:40 Eastern. Mariners minus 109 on the money line. Are we taking Seattle? Are we going to the prop market? What do you like here?
Yeah, I like Seattle on this one. I'm surprised that these odds are so close to equal. The lineups are very close to equal. Sure, the Diamondbacks actually slightly better. Their team WRC Plus ranks fourth in the league, whereas the Mariners a very strong sixth as well. But there's a big gap between the pitchers. Brian Wu versus Eduardo Rodriguez. Wu has a 3.07 ERA. ERA estimators only trail that by less than half a run. He's got a whip under one, slightly above average strikeout rate, but hardly walking anybody, just a 3.7% walk rate. Rodriguez on the other side, his ERA sits at 6.70. And all right, the ERA estimators don't think it's been that bad, but a 1.65 whip as well. He's given up 14 runs in 11 and two-thirds innings over his last three starts, 10 strikeouts against six walks. I don't really understand why the odds are where they are in this one.
Yankees and the Royals in Kansas City. This is game two of this series. Yankees won in a big way last night, Eric. Jumped all over Noah Cameron, starting with a huge homer from Aaron Judge in the first inning. But they see Chris Bubich tonight. He goes up against Clark Schmidt. Bubich, one of the biggest surprises in all of baseball this season. Is this a get-right spot potentially for Kansas City?
Yeah, I think it is. I like the Royals on the money line at slight plus money here. Both of these pitchers are going to throw a ton of sweepers. I don't think anybody offers a prop on over the total number of sweepers, but if they do, I'd take it. Schmidt, that's got him to a pretty decent overall record, a 4.04 ERA, 1.29 whip, a slightly above average strikeout rate, but a few too many walks as well. But Chris Bubich, as you mentioned, one of the surprises of the season, well, only sort of a surprise. I think people in the know thought there might be something here. He actually sort of broke out last year as a reliever coming back from Tommy John surgery. It was just a question of how much of that was going to translate to the rotation. Looks like all of it and more, a 1.43 ERA so far. He's not that good, but the ERA estimators are in the low threes. He's got a 27% strikeout rate, is quite strong, and he's slightly better than average in walks and ground balls as well. Just a really good all-around pitcher. Not a 1.43 ERA pitcher, but this is not a Noah Cameron situation where I would expect all the regression to hit tonight. I think Bubich looks like a very solid number 2-3 starter going forward.
Rangers are at the Minnesota Twins tonight, Eric. Rangers piled up 16 runs last night. Simeon Woods-Richardson with a disaster outing for Minnesota. David Festa gets his turn in the rotation tonight. He was recently called up. Got shelled, going to be honest. Gave up 8 earned runs last time out against the Athletics, of all teams, Eric. But you're looking at a K's prop tonight for Festa going up against this Rangers team.
Yeah, it was at the Athletics, but again, it was at the Athletics is the crucial thing here. That park in Sacramento, it was an afternoon game. There's going to be some high-scoring games in that small park once it heats up in Sacramento. So I'm going to forgive Festa that one poor start, and I think he's going to go over his 5.5 strikeouts here. He's got a poor ERA, 5.40 through four starts, but the ERA estimators are much better at 28% strikeout rate. He's actually hit this over twice in four outings, despite never throwing more than 4 2/3 innings this year. I expect the Twins are going to need some more length from him now that he's a permanent fixture of the rotation. They've had shoulder injuries to Pablo Lopez and Zebby Matthews. Festa is here to stay. They're going to have to start treating him as somebody who gives them a shot at least 6 innings. I think you'll only need 5 to get 6 strikeouts here. The Rangers don't strike out a ton, but they do strike out more than average. They're 11th worst in team strikeout rates. I think 5 innings get you 6 strikeouts from Festa, and if he even goes 6, you could get 7 or 8 Ks.
Dodgers-Padres coming our way later this afternoon, Eric. And this Dodgers team has been tough to evaluate of late. They went with the opener strategy last night against San Diego. That did not work. Lou Trevino pitched the first inning. Totally fine. He was clean. Hands it off to Matt Sauer. He gives up 13 hits, 9 earned runs over 4 2/3. Dodgers lose that game 11-1. But so many injuries on this pitching staff right now for the Dodgers, Eric. They're going back to the well. Going to start Ben Kasperius. The expectation is that he'll hand things off to Justin Wroblewski going up against Randy Vasquez tonight for the Padres. Total in this game sitting at 9.5. What's the angle?
Yeah, I do not really trust the pitching here. I don't think it's going to take Kike Hernandez coming in the 6th inning like he did yesterday to hit some overs in this one. Also, by the way, I miss the days when position players pitching was fun. We need to see them required to try to throw 80 or throw a knuckleball or something so that that's fun again. But back to this game, I like the over, certainly, and I like all sorts of batter props as well. I would probably take the batter props more on the Dodgers side. Randy Vasquez, one of those guys who barely strikes out more batters than he walks. His respectable ERA is not going to last for long. The Kasperius-Wroblewski pairing on the Dodgers side, the thing about that is it's a right-left split, which is the smart way to do an opener. You get the team to line up as if they're facing a righty, and then you bring in the lefty in the 3rd or 4th inning. That means no Padres can have the platoon advantage for, you know, the whole first 6 innings, whereas that could be the case on the Dodgers side. So I like a lot of runs here, and I like the Dodgers hitter props as well.
We'll close things out with our best bets of the night. They're brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you have to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 over at FirstBet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. FirstBet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. That's a $200 value. The $500 trifecta from GBank, FirstBet, and VSiN. Head to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply now. Terms and conditions apply. Eric, on the way out, your best bet of the night.
Yeah, I think it's that David Festa over 5.5 Ks that I mentioned. The results haven't totally been there for him, but the strikeout stuff has been. The length would be a worry, but with all the injuries to that Twins rotation, I think they're going to need length from Festa, so I think he gets you at least 6 Ks.
All right, I'm tailing our guy Alex Berutha. I like that Jalen Williams over 1.5 steals, plus 135 at DK. That's going to wrap Prop Points on this Wednesday. Keep it right here. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next.